Restaurant Unstoppable, episode 1073 with Jen Heidinger Kendrick.
Having the chance and the freedom within yourself to reach out and ask for help, as we tie it back to like what Giving Kitchen does today, especially for someone like a Patrick or a Ryan or the 18,000 food service individuals that Giving Kitchen has helped now in our 11 years, it is that message of it is okay to reach out and ask for help.
Are you ready for it factors, success stories, failures, and bombs of restaurant industry knowledge? Then, join Eric Cacciatore and today's incredible guest as they share what it takes to become unstoppable.
This episode is brought to you by Mies. With Mies, you can standardize your culinary IP and stay in sync, giving the culinary team the ability to both create recipes and distribute them from the same platform. You can train your team quickly and maintain dish consistency by turning your recipes into interactive training material, and you can get laser-accurate food costs because Mies allows you to calculate the yield of ingredients with prep loss included. Create a free account by visiting getmeez.com/unstoppable. That's getmeez.com/unstoppable. And as a listener of Restaurant Unstoppable, you can get 25 recipes uploaded to your Mies account for free. Sign up today and learn more at getmeez.com/unstoppable. This podcast was made possible by Restaurant Systems Pro, and we need to let you know that every second and fourth Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, CEO of Restaurant Systems Pro, Fred Langley, will be going live, where he'll cover what you need to know about running a profitable restaurant from soup to nuts. This live event will reveal the steps to manage the service and financial goals for your restaurant's productivity. To learn more, head to go.restaurantsystemspro.com. pro.net/restaurantunstoppable. This episode brought to you by owner.com. owner.com is the leading all-in-one platform for restaurant marketing. owner.com powers everything from SEO optimized websites, direct online ordering, automated email and text marketing, built-in loyalty programs, zero commission delivery, and branded mobile apps for your restaurant that's integrated right into your POS. With owner.com, there's no contract, no hidden fees, and nothing to lose. Join thousands of restaurant owners using owner.com to grow direct online sales, save thousands in third-party fees, and simplify their online ordering presence all in one. Book a free demo today at owner.com/unstoppable and see why owner.com is the number one rated restaurant marketing software. This episode made possible by Restaurant Technologies, Inc. RTI's Total Oil Management automates your entire cooking oil process. With Total Oil Management, you get dependable fresh bulk cooking oil delivery, filtration plus oil usage monitoring and reporting, easy oil disposal, use cooking oil pickup and recycling, and say goodbye to messy, dangerous restaurant rendering tanks. Yuck. RTI's end-to-end cooking oil system helps you manage your used cooking oil disposal, storage, collection, and recycling conveniently, safely, and cleanly with no upfront cost. Restaurant Technologies, Inc. is always on, so you don't have to be. To learn more, head to RTI-Inc.com and let them know Restaurant Unstoppable Podcast sent you their way. With excitement, allow me to introduce you today's guest, founder of the Giving Kitchen, Jen Heidinger Kendrick. Jen, are you feeling unstoppable today?
Very unstoppable. Favorite Sia song.
Oh man, I am psyched to be here. Yeah, right? Isn't that a good one? I recently did a reel to that. I love it. I'm super excited to be here. I want to give a special nod to Will Browley, who told me to get you on the show. And honestly, the Staple House has been on my radar for a long time.
Awesome.
I think I reached out way back when I was getting started. I just to say that I admired you guys. I always wanted to get you on the show, and I'm making it happen here today. An extension of the Staple House, at least. You know, and what you're doing with Giving Kitchen. I can't wait to dive into it, but let's get that motivational, inspirational ball rolling with a success quote or mantra. What do you got for us?
One of my favorites from my late husband, Ryan Heidinger. It is anything long lasting or worthwhile takes time and complete surrender.
I had a feeling you were going to go with that one. Why does that resonate with you?
It is one of the most powerful testimonies to sticking with it. true acceptance and just being a part of the journey, whatever is before you, and being fearless through it. When Ryan was still alive, he gave a speech actually at the High Museum here in Atlanta through a session called Creative Mornings. And the room was filled with people. I'll never forget. It was on June 28th, 2013. It happened to be my birthday. And that was something he said to the crowd of people. Anything long-lasting or worthwhile takes time and complete surrender. It's beautiful. Yeah.
And, you know, I think it's so important in this industry, too, because it's so hard. And I think today in the world of just the world we live in, there seems to be like this desire for instant gratification. And we don't have patience to put the work in. And really success in this industry is about persistence over time. And just showing up with that vision and that grit. And it does not happen overnight. It takes years.
Absolutely. You have to constantly show up, put yourself out there, be available.
Right.
And it's the follow-up too. I think that's the showing up time and time again, is that constant follow-up.
And I think what you and Ryan were doing was a beautiful example of that. Because you guys, when did you guys first cross paths? How on your timeline?
Yeah. So I was actually 17 years old. I was a senior in high school. Ryan was 5 years older, 22. He was working at a catering company nearby. We're both originally from Indianapolis, Indiana.
Okay.
So I was back home in Indy. When we met, I was a cashier and worked in the office. And I think he thought I was a little older than I actually was. But he would come in to buy packs of Bubblicious bubblegum, just to like come through my line and say hi. And then he asked me out one day, and kind of the rest was history. We started dating all through college, post, and of course, you know, got married here.
Wild.
Oops, yeah.
Wild. But you had this vision. When did the vision for Staple House come into the view?
So that was back in, you know, 2009 is really kind of when the first prelude to Staple House Supper Club started. But it was, I'll even go back just a tiny bit before that. You know, we moved to Atlanta in 2004. We actually, right after I graduated from Indiana University, went on a cross-country road trip. We did not know how long we'd be gone, but we figured this was a great opportunity for us to just see the quote-unquote world, at least our country, and find a place that we wanted to call home. It ended up being Atlanta in 2004. Ryan had started working in some of Atlanta's just, you know, most beloved restaurants and under some really recognized chefs before he found his home at Muss and Turner's, local sandwich shop, many years ago up in Smyrna, Georgia, just north of the city. And to fast forward just a little bit, he was working there. But we were in Atlanta, and we always had said, like, in order to stay in a city or anywhere, really, we really needed to be a part of the fabric of it. Like, it, for us to feel pulled to stay anywhere, that's what we really needed. Right before his 30th birthday, it was 2008, he was in a really bad car accident that actually set him out of work for 2.5 months. He was working for Muss and Turner, so Ryan Turner, Todd Mussman at the time, and they kept him on payroll, kept him under insurance to be able to allow his recovery from this massive car accident. And it was kind of one of the, and Giving Kitchen didn't exist at that point.
Right. What year was this again? Remind me.
2008.
Okay.
Yep. And so what it did provide was some time at home for self-reflection, a lot of self-reflection for both of us, but mainly Ryan, to, you know, to say, there was a life-threatening, you know, crisis that happened to me. What is next?
Right. And it puts things into perspective.
Exactly. And so by January of 2009, so it was just a few months later, we decided to start a supper club out of our home to really, you know, set the horizon on being a part of the community in a different way, and one day wanting to open up something of, you know, his own or our own.
Can you tell me more about Ryan and give me the listeners a sense of who he was and what he stood for and what the appeal was about him?
Yeah, I always say Ryan was a good old Indiana boy. Grew up, you know, a Midwesterner. We moved to the South. Incredibly well respected, admired. Goofy, to be honest. He, as a chef, was very finesse driven, really simplistic with ingredients. You could always tell there was never more than, you know, 5 main ingredients to a dish. His food was clean, it was approachable, it was delicious. But his character is really what shone out the most. And I think that's really why it brought community together so fearlessly.
Yeah. Tell me more about the character. Yeah.
He was just, again, he was just kind of this goofy dude. He led with charisma. He was not willing to speak up. He did so in a genuine and compassionate way. He was an incredible listener. He, you know, as a chef, you're in business all the time. You get up early, you're there all day, you go through the the night, depending on, you know, what shift you're working. But I mean, he was, you know, he worked in fine dining and in this, you know, in this establishment where people were at the focus. You know, he was incredibly committed to his chefs and the line, you know, and just really wanting the best for everybody. And, you know, wanting the best for everybody means you have to really know people. So he's really committed to the human.
Yeah. And mm-hmm. I like to say behind every great restaurant is a great person or great people. Mm-hmm. And the restaurant is an extension of who you are, your values. And you will never be a great restaurateur until you become a great person. And it sounds like the outpouring from the community when you got the news, and I know we're not there in your story yet, but that is just a testament to the character. And if you want to be a great restaurateur and you're listening to this, like, really look in the mirror and ask yourself, who am I and who can I be? And start working towards that if you want to be great.
Absolutely. Know? And that's a testament to his bosses and our mentors at the time too. They were restaurateurs. They are still restaurateurs. And it's
best
really a testament to,
yeah,
exactly, not just to Ryan, but the people he surrounded himself with, including
I love
them.
What I do. I get to surround myself with all these people. So, and I love that you guys started a supper club. I mean, we're here. Dinner club. Do you prefer dinner club or supper club?
We called it an underground supper club.
Supper club.
Yeah.
I mean, it's that if I'm opening a restaurant, I know we're here to talk about Giving Kitchen, but at the same time, I know that you're a restaurateur yourself and you went through this and you started, you know, the process and you follow through even after Ryan's passing. So I think there's lessons that I can pull. But starting small and having a vision and sharing that vision and just starting where you can. And if that means inviting people over for dinner, start there.
Absolutely.
You know, and just gather the emails. Like, so take us through what you learned by doing that.
So we started this underground supper club. We called it Prelude to Staple House, knowing Staple House was going to be this restaurant we envisioned one day, staples being the things that you craved and loved and wanted to come back to.
Okay.
House.
I was curious about that.
Yeah.
Thank you for explaining.
Yeah, and house being the place you go to get them, right? For us, that's what it was. And it started inside our home, around our dining room table. We would, I'll never forget the very first email I sent out was to, it was like less than 200 people. It was, and a lot of the people I had on my email list were friends back home who we knew weren't going to come from Indiana. And a few people that I had met over the years that were, you know, a part of my group. And we sent out kind of this blind email with a menu. I remember Ryan and his brother Scott, actually, we would take photos of just like, you know, food on a prep table. And then his brother Scott would create this graphic and this menu and with a date on it. And we'd send it out in an email. And the first 10 people to reply were the ones who got seats. Mm. And that's exactly how it happened. The first couple of dinners took a couple of days to sell out. We would host these. I mean, Ryan obviously worked every night. I worked days at the time. We had one day off that we had together. It was always on Sundays. And so we chose Sunday nights to be the time that we would host guests in our home, strangers 99% of the time. Again, we would send those emails out. They would be first come, first served. We'd ask for a donation. We'd gather 10. Ryan would cook a 5-course dinner. I would serve and host. Strangers would come into the house. They would look at the house before they came in and kind of shake their head like, what did we get ourselves into? Because this was really uncommon. You know, these things were happening in New York and San Francisco and LA and in Seattle, not really in Atlanta. And so it was this amazing kind of visual that I fondly look back on of just like hesitation turned. The most inspiring thing to me is what I have seen stem from that. And it's those people who came time and time again. We left giving hugs and high fives and just craving this opportunity for community and learning about people. Right. It was awesome.
But
it was
about
awesome.
Building a list, 10 people at a time.
Yeah.
Right. And you do that. How many times did you do this?
Oh, God, for 4 years.
Many times a week?
Yes. By the time he was diagnosed, 4 years. So once a week. It wasn't every single Sunday, but it turned out to be a source of additional income for us. I'm not going to lie, from donations.
Like 40 times a year. Right?
Sure. Yeah.
40 times. Plus
a couple big events we hosted. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think, you know, just starting small, and how can you get more intimate than inviting somebody into your home to share your story and to feed them? Like, that's a customer for life right there.
I think so.
You know, like, and you're setting that foundation of these, like, of your regulars.
Yeah.
It's so important. You're collecting their emails because they have to, I mean, you're emailing them, they're signing up to come.
Yes.
Right. So you have you're building this list. It's such a smart way to get started. I love it. And it's, how much did it cost?
Cost of goods.
Yeah.
And then some donations. But I want to reflect on that a little bit because, I mean, you're exactly right. Our restaurants that we go into, is an extension of our homes. And I need people. I need the community of people who are not in food service to really hear that. The restaurants that you go into are an extension of those homes to get to learn about humans.
Right.
And the opportunity to celebrate or mourn or whatever it might be around a table. And you, I mean, you parallel it to like what a great opportunity for us to get to learn about people in the city and all that in our home. It is the exact same way that our restaurants get to do it. They show their skills, they show their love, they show their people's, you know, skills around just wanting to learn about their guests. It's the exact same extension. It really was a kind of a powerful movement.
And I think I'm happy you said that, because I think that we put so much emphasis on being amazing hosts, and that the relationship between host and guest has become very transactional, and to the point where I feel comfortable saying is that people need to remember how to be guests again.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
for sure.
If you didn't like it, that's fine. Yeah. Like, speak with your money. Like, just don't go back. You don't need to like pull someone's name and like destroy a restaurant and like blow them up online. It's just rude.
Yeah.
You know,
it is. It's just rude.
It's this culture we live in today where it's just like, what are we doing?
Yeah. You know?
But
should be more about uplifting for
100%.
Sure.
100%. Okay. So let's get into 2012. You get this news. Mm-hmm. Take us to where you were at that point, like where you were in your progress for opening your restaurant and, you know, take it from there.
Yeah. So to 2012, we're now 4 years, you know, fast forward. This idea of opening up a restaurant turned into just for Ryan, for Jen and Ryan. This was an idea we wanted to pursue. We built a business plan. We talked to banks. We met investors. Again, people who were coming into our home to dine became some of our original investors. They became the people that we went to for relationships with banks and guarantor. Everything you can think of, it happened around this dining room table. And we finally get to 2012, we're about the summertime, everything started to come together. We had found a space, we had found a bank who was willing to back us, we found some guarantors, everything just started to come into place. And then our wedding anniversary was in November. We had I gave him a gift to get to New York City to try the food there. He had, as a chef, had never been to New York, right?
What a gift.
Very fun. We could only afford a ticket to get there for like 12 hours, though. Okay. So I couldn't even afford a hotel, but I was like, go, be there, have some fun, eat, come back. He ended up taking my former business partner, Ryan Smith, with him that day, and they came back the same night. But it was the very next day that he started feeling really sick. This was December timeframe in 2012. Started to miss a few days of work. Never happened. He never missed a day of work. Sleepless nights, never happened. We ended up sending him to the doctor to get an ultrasound. Found some abnormalities, so it led to an MRI. And on December 21st of 2012, we sat across from an oncologist who said, "You've got 6 months to live." Mm. We found cancer. It's gallbladder cancer. It's stage 4. It had metastasized to his liver and his lungs, and it was a terminal cancer diagnosis.
Oh man, that's scary. I mean, as somebody who has gallstones and who recently did not feel good, and
man, yeah,
and I went through. Luckily, it was just stones, you know, but like, I'm just trying to imagine, like, if I got the news that was basically cancer, like, I don't know what would be going through, like, the same age, too, 37 years old, you know, mm-hmm. like, how do you even take that news? Like, take us to, like, how did he take it? How did you take it? What were you feeling?
You know, I always kind of give the visual, because you take the news as you take the news. You know, we've all been struck by tragedy. You know, death is everywhere. Cancer, it is so common. I remember for me and my experience was it was a small room. It had yellow walls. I remember the doctor sitting actually on the patient chair where the paper is. And Ryan and I was sitting on Ryan's lap and we were just in a side chair. And I remember looking over at a computer screen almost about that size. And kind of quiet, a little bit of white noise and just sheer shock.
Right.
And that lasted for a long time, the shock. I remember we left and Ryan had actually said, "I would love for you to make those initial phone calls." And I remember he went home and we took a nap. It was a Friday evening. So he laid down while I made some initial phone calls. And the first two were to immediate, you know, family on both sides. And then my third phone call was to Ryan Turner of Muss & Turner's, his boss, a mentor to us both. I will literally never forget that that third phone call, because it really changed the trajectory of how food service has an opportunity more so today than ever before.
Right. Can you take us to that phone call?
I called. Turner was in the middle of service. He knew that we were going to have an MRI. And I said, I need you to step aside and step out so you have some quiet space. And I said, here's the news. This is what we were just told. I remember it being a little quiet on the other end of the line. And I remember him saying, I'll be back. And it was within days, hours even, that they came over to our home, Muss and Turner, and sat around our dining room table with Ryan and I and basically said, let us help you. We know how to do several things really, really well, but throwing a party, a fundraiser, is definitely one of those. Gathering people, gathering community to uplift somebody else is something that this hospitality community knows how to do. So let us help you. And we said, okay.
Yeah.
You know, as a young couple, and even young or older, you know, that's the sense of pride is rampant and heavy, and it's really hard to accept that help. We were so focused on Ryan's medical journey that, of course, the answer was do what you think you want to do to help us. And it really was. It was a pivotal moment. Within 3.5 weeks, a community came together. About 1,000 people showed up. A fundraiser was named and deemed Team Heidi. Heidi ends up being short for Ryan's last name, Heidinger. It was his nickname in high school. We played high school basketball, so Heidi. And it was the only way I could get his attention in a crowd full of people was to, instead of saying Ryan, everybody's name is Ryan, I would say Heidi, and he would turn around and look at me. So Team Heidi was born, and in, again, 3.5 weeks, about 1,000 people showed up at King Plow Arts Space right over here on the west side of Atlanta. 45 of Atlanta's most beloved restaurants and bartenders showed up, live music, an auction. I'll never forget Ryan standing on stage in front of strangers, many friends, but many strangers also, saying and declaring his cancer diagnosis a gift, because look at what it had done, was to bring people together for one common purpose.
And the narrative in my head, and this mantra that's running through my head, is like, in the restaurant industry, we've been conditioned to write the end of the story, because there shit hits the fan in this industry. Mm-hmm. You know, like, there's going to be something that happens. We can't knock it out of the park all the time. And even if there's a bad experience, we're just so conditioned to make the best out of it, because we can still write the end of the story. No matter what happens in a night of service, I just think we're conditioned to make the most out of any situation. Mm-hmm. And you see that even after the worst news you could possibly get, let's make the best out of this news. What can we do to write the end of the story?
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think for that, you know, there's a lot of choices we have to make in life, right? And I think the biggest thing that has inspired so much was Heidi's opportunity of accepting his path. There was a moment, and it just happened. It's like these light bulb moments that happen in our lives, that there was complete sadness and shock and fear and everything that can kind of really cover you up. And one day light shone in, and there was just this, I just am going to choose to accept this and see what happens. And he led his entire final year in that mindset. It was incredibly inspiring for people to watch.
Now's a good time to take a break to thank our sponsors, and we'll be right back to talk about what happened from this moment on. This episode is brought to you by Mies. Running the back of house brings a whole suite of challenges, like distributing intellectual property from your chef's brain to your back of house team across all of your locations. Once that information gets distributed, you still have to train your back of house to ensure the recipes are being executed accurately and consistently. Once everybody is trained, you still have to nail down profit calculations, which can be a nightmare when your team doesn't fully understand theoretical food costs, factoring in yields, and unit conversions. Then, once all this is done, you still have to push the information across all of your locations in real time, factoring in the prices that are constantly changing. Are you kidding me? That's where Mies comes in. With Mies, you can standardize your culinary intellectual property and stay in sync as a team. You can train your team quickly and maintain dish consistency
by turning your recipes into interactive training material, and you can get laser accurate food costs because Mies allows you to calculate the yields of your ingredients with prep loss included. Create a free account by visiting getmies.com/unstoppable. That's getmeez.com/unstoppable. And as a listener of Restaurant Unstoppable, you can get 25 recipes uploaded to your Mies account for free. Sign up today and learn more at getmeez.com/unstoppable. This podcast is made possible by Restaurant Systems Pro, and we need to let you know that every second and fourth Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern, 1 p.m. Pacific, CEO of Restaurant Systems Pro, Fred Langley, will be going live where he'll cover what you need to know about running a profitable restaurant from soup to nuts. This live event will reveal the steps to manage the service and financial goals for your restaurant's productivity. Everyone who attends this live event will get a recording of the Restaurant Systems Pro 4-day How to Run a Profitable Restaurant from Soup to Nuts recording. This event costs $2,500 to attend live, and you'll get it for free. Head to go.restaurantsystemspro.net/restaurantunstoppable. That's go.restaurantsystemspro.net/restaurantunstoppable.
We're back, and so bring me to... I mean, so many things we could talk about right now. Where would you like to go? I'm curious. Like, what do you think needs to be brought to the conversation first?
You know, I think speaking about the origin story is really important. And that's just my story, right? That's my story and some family members. And everybody, even within Ryan's family, has their own personal story. I think the spark is that, you know, there is a giving kitchen story for everyone. And it's this idea of what tragedy turned to triumph, to be honest. Mm. And kind of what happened around that inspiration to really spark this idea of a nonprofit that now helps every food service worker in the United States.
Right. And I think one thing that I want to bring to the surface of today's conversation is just acknowledging the issue that's within our industry of people just not taking care of themselves. It's such a head down, 70 hours a week, work. My health comes last. It's all about everybody else but me. Yeah. It's like this culture that we have until sometimes it's too late. And I want to share an example of some folks that I recently had on the show, Patrick and Timmy Shibley, out of Wichita, Kansas, the Doodah Diner. I don't know if you've ever heard of them.
Mm.
A week before Patrick was diagnosed with prostate cancer, I interviewed them. Mm. And I got to be there and I could see what he was going through. He was just so just like, she gave me some numbers, 407 PSA. Does that mean anything to you?
Not at the moment, but maybe it will.
It's like a way to like measure, I think it's white blood cells
okay.
or something. Or like,
it's been a while, but
yeah.
Yes.
And I don't know anything about this. Fortunately, I haven't had to learn a lot about this sort of things, but apparently that is off the charts. Mm. And he was working. And Patrick, I hope I'm not oversharing. They thought it was like, he had hemorrhoids, you know? And it turns out he had like, I want to say stage 3 cancer or something like that. No. They had known for a long time, but he thought that he fell, he was working, he slipped, he fell off the back of his pickup truck. Mm. And he just thought that he was getting old. Mm. He had like a broken back. He had torn rotator cuff and he had all this stuff going on. He just kept showing up and working. Mm-hmm. Listen to your body. Don't keep going. Prostate cancer is one of the easiest things to come back from. Not easy, but the highest odds of, you know, a good outcome. Mm-hmm. It could have been curable. Don't do that to yourself. What's going through your mind as I'm saying
this? I'm picking up everything. I think what I hear, and I think the biggest focus that I want to pay attention to is that it is okay to not be okay. And recognizing that and having the chance and the freedom within yourself to reach out and ask for help, as we tie it back to like what Giving Kitchen does today, especially for someone like a Patrick or a Ryan or the 18,000 food service individuals that Giving Kitchen has helped now in our 11 years, it is that message of it is okay to reach out and ask for help. No one has to know the nitty gritty about the details of what's going on. In fact, that should stay confidential, especially when you're dealing with, you know, to the type of services that we offer. But it is absolutely okay to be in pain and in fear because there is someone there who is willing to step up and help you.
Right. It's just so important. You know, it's just so important to speak in that. And I think we just are so used to carrying the weight of the shoulder, or the weight of the world's on our shoulders. Mm-hmm. You know, we just go, go, go. And we just don't know how, like, we feel like we have to pull and like, we can't show any sign of weakness, mm-hmm. you know, but it's so important that you ask for help. So, paint the picture. I mean, do you want to talk more about Staple House? Because I know that you guys ended up opening 2016, right?
It was 2015. So Ryan ended up passing in January of 2014. He was able to see the formation, this budding of Giving Kitchen start. Beautiful. He was not able to see Staple House open. However, at that time, I ended up going into partnership with my with Heidinger's sister, Kara Heidinger, and Ryan Smith, her husband. So my in-laws. And former business partners, but we ended up seeing Staple House come to fruition in September of 2015. We started off as, you know, back then in origin was casual fine dining. We had a tasting menu. Incredible, incredible. There was some accolades that came in 2016 through the James Beard Foundation as recognized as one of the country's best new restaurants. Later that year, Bon Appetit named us the best new restaurant in America. It was incredible. This opportunity to have this symbiotic relationship with a nonprofit, the idea of, you know, this restaurant being this kind of beacon of hope in food and service. And at the end of the day, what it was also doing was, you know, offering light to this idea of giving back to community and giving back to food service workers when they need it. There was this synergy of Giving Kitchen as a nonprofit parent and Staple House as the for-profit subsidiary of the nonprofit. And that lasted until Giving Kitchen sold it actually in 2020. So I came on to Giving Kitchen and to be with our staff over here full time in 2019. I left my partnership with Staple House. Giving Kitchen then sold it to Ryan Smith and Kara Heidinger back in 2020.
Any lessons about restaurant? I mean, you know, we're here to create awareness about the Giving Kitchen and to hopefully dive more into that as the conversation progresses. But I also, as a restaurant business podcast, it's so hard for me to gloss over the business side of things, the restaurant business side of things. So what knowledge, wisdom, advice, mentorship do you have? What were the challenges with running the restaurant? Anything along those lines that you can share before we move on?
You know, for having three people in business together, there was, you know, you hear often about that three-legged stool, if you will. Ryan Smith is an exceptional chef. He's one of the best in the United States. I mean, he really kind of deserves all the accolades. So we've got somebody in the kitchen and in food and running that. And then with Kara, both Kara and Ryan too, they come from hospitality. That is what they, through high school, post-college, their entire adult career has always been in food service. So they are true experts at it. And with Kara, she is hospitality driven to her core. And so she ran the front of house. She acted as our general manager. And then I was kind of the books. I also helped and supported our staff on the floor nightly for many years. But I was the one kind of behind the scenes, obviously pushing the brand, pushing the mission, being a spokesperson for Giving Kitchen and Staple House at the time,
right.
And helping run the bus.
Having somebody who has a degree in broadcast communication on your team is genius.
Well, yeah, that was an accident, but yes.
But I mean, it just goes to show the power of being able to communicate and get the word out is a big part of what we have to do today.
And I think in storytelling, that's really just where, you know, I have found my passion. You know, I went to school, but I ended up not going to the Kelley School of Business at Indiana University because I was deathly afraid of public speaking, deathly. And it is just fascinating still to me today that this is all I do all day, every day. Storytell to one, to thousands, doesn't matter. I'm just so inspired by what I know sharing and opening yourself does for other people. Mm. I've seen it in my own life and I've seen it in others now
100%.
Too.
100%. So as a restaurateur, a restaurant owner, what were your biggest struggles with the business side of running a restaurant?
Yeah. We all brought our gifts. You know, working with family, there's also challenges. I mean, there's working with kind of your family. You're in there, like you said, 70 plus hours a week. Right. They become your family no matter what. You know, I think there was just this kind of newness to it all. We've never gone into business before. an incredible challenge to do it through grief, an incredible challenge to do it through grief. And again, to just, you know, to do it in a way where it was never really done before, with having a nonprofit be the parent, you know, there were two separate boards. The business was really hard, like the actual intricacies of the business. There's a nonprofit, you have a board, you answer to them. This for-profit subsidiary, the Staple House, had a board that we had to answer to.
What is subsidiary like defined?
It was a for profit, so just like any other
restaurant,
whatever. Yeah. Yep. We channeled our profits to a bank loan and to back up to the nonprofit parent. So as a channel of funds being going back to the community, it through the programs of Giving Kitchen.
So Staple House had a philanthropic arm where it was donating a portion of its profits to the nonprofit.
Yes. And that was always kind of the goal. That was kind of the idea from the very beginning. Of course, you know, you get through the years and there's just, again, many hardships, which was why the decision was made in 2020 to go ahead and sell it and allow Ryan and Kara to just carry it on however they like.
Yeah. That makes total sense for sure. So, tell us more about Giving Kitchen. Like, if we're listening to this, maybe we just got horrible news, maybe we need some help. What do we need to know?
Simple. Giving Kitchen helps food service workers. We do two things exceptionally well. If a food service worker is in crisis, so this is an illness, an injury, the death of an immediate family member, or a house flood or fire in your home, something crisis related like that, Giving Kitchen will step in and help pay the rent and utilities so food service workers can get back on their feet. They're missing work, they're out of work, and they need some help. That's where we can step in. We also offer community resource referrals. So when you think of, wow, Giving Kitchen was fantastic. They helped me pay 2 months of my rent and utilities. I didn't have to worry about any of that, but I'm really suffering from some mental health issues right now. I'm going to reach back out to Giving Kitchen because I know that they're going to be able to give me some access to low or no cost services throughout the country. We have built a really wonderful reputation through our relationships. At the end of the day, that human connection and those relationships are key. And that's how Stability Network is really meant to work, is to give a warm referral from food service to community resource instantaneously.
Yeah. And the process seems pretty obvious. You just go to thegivingkitchen.org.
Yes.
And then from there, ask for help.
That's pretty exactly straightforward. Right. Pretty just straightforward. Yes. And everything that we do is in Spanish and in English. Okay. We have a multilingual call center, and we can speak to food service workers in over 180 languages.
And there's literally a button. I said ask for help. There's a button that says ask for help.
That's all it is. It is that simple. That's what you'll hear in our messaging and all over social, and is just that simple. Ask for help.
18,085 food service workers served. That's amazing.
Yeah. That's just recent.
That's just this year?
That's just recent. That 18,000 mark of food service workers served just happened in the last couple of weeks.
85.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. 85 over. Yep. Anything else we should know about the Giving Kitchen that hasn't come out of today's conversation?
You know, I just think it's, you know, to see a need and to see it flourish and built by community and for community is just one of the neatest things I've ever seen happen. You know, Giving Kitchen started right here inside Metro Atlanta. 11 years ago, we were only helping full service restaurant workers. When you pick up the phone and you hear story after story after story, you do a really good job of listening. And I want to make sure that the community knows that this organization, we are buttoned up. We can help any food service worker. There is no barrier to entry. We serve with compassion and care, and we are really good at our jobs. We are efficient. And I say that because when you look at Giving Kitchen's growth over the past 11 years, in 2016 and 2017, we were helping 250, 350 people a year. We would award, you know, $500,000 in financial aid. In 2023, Giving Kitchen helped over 5,000 food service individuals, $3.5 million in financial aid just in 2023. Since our inception, Giving Kitchen has helped over 18,000 people. We have awarded over $12 million in financial aid. Holy. We have prevented nearly $20 million in excess costs. We've done calculations. We did a calculation in a project with Georgia Tech a few years ago here in Atlanta. For every dollar out is $1.65 saved. And that's a very conservative estimate. So when you're looking at the eviction, you know, late fees on hospital statements or eviction, you know, fees, all of that adds up. And that's nearly $20 million in excess costs that this agency has provided just for, just by helping, you know, our food service community.
There's a lot of, I feel like a lot of nonprofits associated with the restaurant industry. A lot of people I've gotten the privilege of talking. There's just so much good that spurs out of the restaurant industry. If we're somebody who wants to start a nonprofit, what advice do you have? Like, what are some good things you can do? You've been doing this for 10 years now, over 10 years, I want to say. Like, what have you learned about creating a nonprofit and having it thrive?
You know, I would love, you know, the common language is, yeah, we would love to be out of a job. Because nonprofits shouldn't exist. Mm. But the reality is that this idea of having social services available for people is not going anywhere anytime soon. I think there are a tremendous amount of not-for-profit agencies out there doing exceptional work for communities, to uplift communities, to bring dignity to individuals, to provide opportunity and stability to individuals. If there's an idea that's out there, do your research. There's probably something that already exists, and there's no reason why you can't band, you know, and join forces to make something stronger. It would be my number one.
Yeah.
You know, back when Giving Kitchen was born, there wasn't anything. Hence why it's been so successful, and with other, you know, similar things that have been brought up over the, you know, past 10 plus years as well. And I think for anybody who's really passionate about service, not just hospitality, food service, I mean like in service of others, honing in on your mission. What is it that you really want to do, and you can measure impact, not just making a difference, but measuring impact.
How do you measure impact?
I'll give a very clear example. It is not just about the food service individual that we are helping. It is that ripple effect within community. It's the household members. It's the number of children. It is what we are doing for an industry that is that ripple effect of what Giving Kitchen is really able to do.
How do you measure that?
We do a lot of data collecting. We measure the individuals who come to us. We do pre and post surveys for our intake. We measure health scores and mental health like scores. And any demographic, you know, data that you can save and track, that's what we do. So we do a lot of client testimonials. Yeah. Whoever's willing to share their story, we're there to listen.
And I think there was a message that kind of squeezed through all that information you just shared us. And it's this idea that when you started this, you were looking for help and it didn't exist. And you created the nonprofit. Is it a nonprofit or a not-for-profit?
I think it's one and the same.
What is the difference if there is one?
That's a great question, actually. I'm not sure if I've...
There is a difference. Yes. I've heard the two... I know there's a difference. I just don't know what it is.
I'll have to ask our teammates next door.
Gotcha. But the message I wanted to pull out was that, you know, there seems... I'm aware of other nonprofits that do similar work that are here to provide aid to people in the like workers, owners that don't have the resources. But it sounds like what the message is, it's better to pool the resources than it is to spread the resources out. Is that what I'm hearing?
I think that's actually fantastic that you picked up on that. And I think it's another thing that Giving Kitchen has done in our 11 years is we were this kind of Jane Jack of all trades of wanting to do so much. I mean, when you're in this nonprofit kind of sector, you're in service of others. That's all you think about. And you want to do everything that you can. You know, we started the agency with financial assistance. It took us a couple years to build our stability network program, that connection to community resources. And all through that, you know, anytime an idea would come our way, we were like, let's try that too. Let's do this event. Let's try this campaign. Let's XYZ. It took us a really long time. And in fact, COVID coming to us in 2020 was kind of the watershed moment for Giving Kitchen, where all the gaps that we had, all of those leaks that they came to us in 2020. All of a sudden, when COVID hit, we were seeing 20 times the volume of clients coming to us and asking for help.
Yeah.
We had a 13-person staff. I mean, we were really small. And this moment came where just all the floodgates opened. And we had an opportunity to say no in a really compassionate way and really hone in and make our message more concise. It wasn't until 2020 when we finally suddenly came to the realization of, we are Giving Kitchen, we help food service workers. The only thing we are asking is for people to come to us and we will do the rest of the work. There's no reason that we need to put parameters on, well, hey, you know, you're not, again, as I said, we started inside full service restaurants. Well, now we help anybody in commercial food service. So no longer do we have to say, oh, well, you work in this establishment, but because you work in a cafe, we can't help you. That's not the case anymore. Anybody who works in a full service restaurant, quick service, fast food, catering, concessions, food trucks, cafeterias, bars, tap rooms, they are in food service and we are here to have their backs.
So in doing the research to get ready for today's conversation, I went and I just Google search, obviously what most people do. And I went and I saw instantly that you had a 4.4 Google review. And I was like, I was thinking to myself, how can something so goodwilled, like, how is it not a 5.0? I instantly had to see that, right? And then I was like, I have to read these reviews. And what's going through my mind right now is, like, the world we live in with just, like, I mean, I do not want your job. And hear me out. I think the work you're doing is amazing. Obviously, you only have so many resources. And there's such a demand for people in need. Or, you know, you have limited resources and there's more people in need than you have resources for. Is that safe to say?
Sure. Yeah.
How do you decide? Like that is why I don't want your job. How do you decide?
Luckily, I'm not the one who does it. We've got a programs team of committed social workers who are trained social workers. Again, a multilingual call center. The opportunity for a food service worker to come and ask for help to the time that they actually receive financial aid or community resources can be within 24 hours. Let me put that into perspective. That 2016, 2017 timeframe when I said we only helped a few hundred people a year, that was a 45 to 60 day turnaround for somebody in crisis saying, I need help yesterday, please help. About a month and a half would go by and they would finally receive a check. Great, because that was progress. Today, we can turn a check around within 7 to 10 business days. Wow. When somebody's facing an eviction, 24 hours. There are community resources that are automatically in people's inboxes or a text message. If a food service worker needs one-on-one case management to get access to something really specific, we will set up a meeting and we will do that over the phone. So again, I don't make the judgment. Our programs team does, but we do that by saying, if you are in food service and you need help, we have something available for you.
Yeah, I mean, and it just goes to show, like I felt bad for restaurants with the reviews that people leave online being outrageous, you know. And I hope you didn't mind me sharing that, but it was just like,
I didn't know.
Yeah, it's just, to me, it's just like, oh my God, like, you know, and I get some people like are feeling desperate and they want to go for help and they maybe don't get the help they're looking for or hope they were hoping for or something.
Sure.
And they just turn to like disparity to like out of anger or whatever. But like what are some of the things that are disqualifying? Let me ask that question.
I think that's actually a great question for maybe why the 4.4 are funny. Right. Let's get that up to 5, everybody. if you're not in food service, you don't qualify.
Okay.
And honestly, that happens a lot. If there's like a food service, I don't know, I can't even think of an example right off the top of my head right at the moment, but you know, maybe at a grocery store or something, there is an adjacent-esque, but they wouldn't qualify. Or there isn't there wasn't a financial crisis that happened. Maybe we offered, you know, a community resource of some sort, but it just wasn't maybe the best. Somebody thought otherwise, you know. Yeah. That would maybe be why.
And again, I don't want your job because it must be so hard to turn people away who are in help. Maybe it's not for the reasons you exist to serve, but people are still in help. And I can only imagine what that must be like.
Sure.
I don't like turning people away who want to be guests on the podcast. I can't imagine turning somebody away who needs help.
Yeah. Know? Well, I will say this, for we have never in our history, and just to maybe button that up,
thank you,
never in our 11 years have we turned away a qualifying client who has come
thank
to Giving Kitchen.
That. Yes. I appreciate that. One more quick break to thank our sponsor, and then I want to talk about how we can support what you're doing. And then we talk about the future of the industry. This episode made possible by Owner.com. Owner.com is the quickest and easiest way for your customers to order directly from you without the expensive 30% commission fees.
With Owner.com, you'll save thousands every month when customers order through your website and branded app instead of third-party delivery apps. And reward your customers with a built-in loyalty program that turns them into regulars who order again and again. Owner.com also helps you rank higher on Google with world-class search engine optimization built specifically for restaurants with an AI-powered website. We cannot forget lists. Build a huge list of people who live near your restaurant fast and market to that list on autopilot with text and email sent at the perfect time to help you grow sales and stay top of mind. Owner.com gives you everything you need to grow and market your restaurant online with no contracts or hidden fees. Visit Owner.com/unstoppable right now to book your free demo and see why thousands of restaurant owners trust Owner.com to power their restaurants online. This episode is brought to you by Restaurant Technologies, Inc. RTI's Total Oil Management automates your entire cooking oil process. With Total Oil Management, you get dependable fresh bulk cooking oil delivery, filtration plus oil usage monitoring and reporting, easy oil disposal, used cooking oil pickup and recycling, and say goodbye to those messy, dangerous restaurant rendering tanks. Yuck. RTI's end-to-end cooking oil system helps you manage your used cooking oil disposal, storage, collection, and recycling conveniently, safely, and cleanly with no upfront cost. RTI services are not limited to oil. They also provide insurance premiums and automated hood cleaning solutions plus hood filtration systems, making your hood cleaning process easy, automatic, and worry-free. In addition to all this, Restaurant Technologies, Inc. can help you reduce your carbon footprint, which we all know is becoming increasingly more important to the consumer. Restaurant Technologies, Inc. is always on, so you don't have to be. To learn more, head to RTI-Inc.com and let them know Restaurant Unstoppable Podcast sent you their way. We're back. One thing I want to make sure we cover. So we talked about how you get help and the work you do, but how can we contribute? How can we join forces and pool our resources?
You know, Giving Kitchen is growing rapidly. I made a statistic, you know, a little earlier in the show where we helped over 5,000 food service workers just in 2023. We will help 10,000 food service workers in 2024. And our goal is to help 100,000 food service workers by 2030. And it's real. We can't do that work without community support. And that's not just community in Atlanta or in the Southeast, which is where we're really heavy, you know, and engaged right now. But we are really becoming a national organization. We will help food service workers across the United States. So we are a national organization, but not everybody knows about us. Giving Kitchen, in my heart, should be a household name. Giving Kitchen should be the very first thing not only food service workers think about, but those who love food service. 50% of us have worked in food service in our life. 90% of us are probably going to go out to eat this week. You know, it's just this, it's this tangible thing that we're a part of every single day. And the only way that we'll be able to do that is with community support. By that, you can sign up and follow us on social media at Giving Kitchen. And if you want to be a supporter, I encourage you to do so. In 2020, when the pandemic hit, I talked about that increase in clients coming to us and asking for help. Another incredible, impactful moment for the agency that happened was that we received over 5,000 new donations to Giving Kitchen in just a few months' time. All of a sudden, this idea of food service being this first line, you know, and essential to our lives was completely apparent. And I don't want that to ever fall off. So we are growing as an organization. We fundraise and we mission drive. And so at the end of the day, if you know a food service worker and they need help, remember Giving Kitchen, because when they're in crisis, they're not going to think about asking for help. They won't. We've seen it for 11 years. But you, as a brother, as a sister, as a mother, as a friend, you're going to remember Giving Kitchen, and you're going to say there's an agency out there who has your back, and to fill out that ask for help form and get the assistance they need. And if you're so inclined and have the opportunity to donate, I don't care if it's $5 or $50,000 or more, we've got plenty of programs, campaigns, and partnerships that we work through throughout the year to accept those donations.
Yeah. And so you go to the Giving Kitchen.com, and right at the very top it says donate. There's a whole basically instructions on how you can get involved if you want to learn more. And you said something earlier that I want to resurface, and I was planning on going here anyway, but you said nonprofits shouldn't even exist, right? So on that note, what do you think needs to change about our industry? Like, if my mission statement is to inspire, empower, and transform the industry, what has to transform about the industry to put the Giving Kitchen out of business?
I want to be super clear. I think that's a great question. There is absolutely nothing wrong about this industry. Giving Kitchen and this industry, it is not about what's wrong with this industry. It's about everything that is right with this industry. An industry that shows up time and time again, puts themselves out there in service of our guests, so our guests and people in our community can enjoy food, celebration, etc. Giving Kitchen is an opportunity for food service workers to know that they have dignity within the workplace, that they matter within community and within humanity. I think there is really nothing wrong with this industry. And I think that's a really common misconception that the labor is too long and it's really hard and grueling. All of those are true, but it's true for CEOs too. Like in business making billions of dollars, there's stress everywhere and there's anxiety everywhere. You know, nonprofits and, you know, within this sector, again, I think it's a broader discussion, right? It's about federal government and local governments also too.
But the question, what needs to change about the world to make the restaurant industry be able to do what it should be able to do?
That I love. I think there has to be a constant reminder of showing up in grace and in kindness. And at the end of the day, we're all here for a really short time.
Why can't restaurants afford to give their people health care?
The margins are tight. You know, not everybody knows that restaurants run on cost of goods and labor, and there's not many out there who have health insurance to be able to cover, you know, their employees. It's a really tight business. And again, when you compare that to like what you're getting out of it from a consumer basis, it's just not
How do we change that?
You got to show up. You got to vote locally. I mean, there's so much about, you know, how communities are really driven, you know. Raise your hand if there's something that you're passionate about. Join a student council or a board of something, or go to your local vote. Like, know what's available and in your community, and those are the opportunities, I think, to make kind of more holistic worldwide or, you know, big national kind of changes. For food service, I just need everybody to know that they matter and they deserve dignity, opportunity, and stability, and Giving Kitchen can give them that.
Yeah, 100%. Anything we haven't discussed that I missed or that you'd like to get out before we start to wrap up?
I mean, no. Thank you so much for all the amazing questions.
Thank you. It was a lot of fun. I was really looking forward to this. I love the work you're doing, and my platform is yours. Anytime I can help you get the word out, please reach out to me. The work you're doing is amazing, and I'm here to create awareness.
Thank you. And again, I know you mentioned Will's name, but to reiterate, he is such a connector of people. So my thanks to Will Brawley, and I appreciate it. Yeah. Follow us at Giving Kitchen and givingkitchen.org.
And Will Brawley with Schedule Fly.
Yeah.
Probably pound for pound, the best investment you can make. If you're not looking to get heavy into tech, but you need a solution within reach, if you're just getting started, you don't have a lot of extra, you know, resources to buy restaurant technology, pound for pound, the highest ROI to get Schedule Fly, to streamline communication. Everybody should be using some type of scheduling software.
Yeah.
It is in reach for everybody.
I totally agree. Yeah. And Will's a great, great friend and a great partner. He's a part of our council in North Carolina. But, you know, if there's ever any questions, you know, you can even visit givingkitchen.org, see who we partner with and who chooses to partner with us. And there's lots of technology options out there for people.
So I have two more questions before we officially have the call to action for the listeners. So, you know, how to connect with you and everything. But again, the mission statement is to inspire, empower, and transform the industry, and in doing so, transform the world. How have you personally transformed? Who are you today? Who is Jen today versus the woman you were when you just got started in this industry?
Oh, wow. I would say I'm a compassionate listener and a fierce advocate for food service workers.
Yeah, I love that. And this last question, it's a doozy. So hang on. Yeah, I have faith that you'll be able to answer it well, though. So if you got the news that you'd be leaving this world tomorrow, all the memories of you, your work, your restaurants, your nonprofits were lost with your departure, with the exception of three pieces of wisdom that you could leave behind for your legacy and for the good of humanity, what would those three pieces of wisdom be?
Family first.
One.
Community second.
Two.
I probably should have said yourself first, but also yourself third.
I love it, Jen. Thank you. And one way that this next question right here is my North Star. Who do you respect and admire in the industry? Who's doing it right? Who is taking care of their people? Maybe it's a restaurant owner. Maybe it's another nonprofit. Who is somebody who needs to be made an example of? Put them on my radar, please.
My goodness. The worst question in the world for me because it's all about the food service workers. Oh, gosh. I it's so hard to answer. There's really too many. I'm not going to single anybody out.
Okay.
But I'm going to say I just want people to show up. I want you to tip well when you go out to eat. Just be mindful. You know, everybody's got a favorite bartender or chef or dishwasher. And again, this is our family. I just want you to show up for them.
And what's the call to action? How can we connect?
Follow us at Giving Kitchen and visit givingkitchen.org. Make sure food service workers know to ask for help.
Instagram handle?
At Giving Kitchen.
Got it. Jen, this is when I say there is no questioning. You are unstoppable.
Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers. There's another episode wrapped up here at Restaurant Unstoppable. Special thanks to our guest today, Jen Heidinger Kendrick, for coming on and letting me be somebody to share what you're doing with Giving Kitchen. It's a, you know, it's a privilege and an honor to make an example of people like you who are literally changing the world by helping transform the restaurant industry. And you know, I think the big takeaway, if there's any message from today's episode, is that there is help available to you. But no matter what's available to you, no matter what door is open for you, you have to be the one to choose to walk through that door and to take the help if you need it. Don't neglect yourself. Don't wait until it's too late to get the help you need. There are resources for you, and hopefully we can spread the word of the Giving Kitchen and what they're doing, and awesome stuff today. So I'm coming at you from Houston, Texas. As I'm recording this, I'm on my way to Austin, Texas. No interviews lined up. Honestly, we have recorded 12 interviews in the last 2 weeks, and I'm just going to take some mental health and reconnect with some people I haven't seen in a while. And I go on some bike rides, and I'm making my way to Arizona, where I hope to spend at least a few weeks, if not a month, out that way, really letting the new vision of Restaurant Unstoppable come to fruition, of just letting the story tell itself, of being open to the universe and listening to what my guests are saying and following up on those leads and really just seeking the truth and sharing this platform with those who are being recommend to us organically. So that's what's on the horizon here in terms of the podcast. But we do have some live events coming your way at Restaurant Unstoppable Network. I know we have Irene Lee, who's going to be live at 1 p.m. Eastern on May 15th. We had to reschedule David Lombardo. We didn't realize we were competing with a lunar eclipse last Monday, and there's no way we're going to be able to compete with that. So we rescheduled David Lombardo. I believe he's going to be joining us live on the 22nd of April. Yes, that's right, at 3 p.m. So if you wanted to miss that or connect that and you missed, there's still opportunity for you to do that. We have some panels coming your way too. We're going to have a delivery panel scheduled. We have a pop-up panel scheduled. And we're creating the space for you guys to have these conversations with leaders in the industry. So just join Restaurant Unstoppable Network. There'll be a link in the show notes for you to do that. And there's a show notes associated with every post. So whether you're on iTunes or Spotify, go to the notes and we'll have links in there to be a part of the network. And if you can't join the network, if you can't be a part of the conversation, be sure to join our Facebook group where we're posting all those conversations. All right, that's it for today. I can't say goodbye without saying thank you to the people who make this possible. Thank you to Jared Parisi with Sumadre Podcast for your editing and copyright and just support over the years. And thank you to Callum Miola, who's crushing it as our community manager. Awesome stuff happening on Horizon. And yeah, I think this is where I say we'll see you next time. Peace out.